Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 302. It's forecaster season. It dropped for you PDF folks right before Thanksgiving. As they say, the check is in the mail. The forecaster should be in the mail right about now. So it's our yearly tradition to have a couple writers from the forecaster on the show to talk about their experience, the content involved, and much, much more. But before we get to that, you can find me on Twitter at BDIntrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. And my co-host, as always, he has his name on the front of the book, for crying out loud, on Twitter at RyanBHQ, Ryan Bloomfield. How we doing, my friend?
Right next to the dumpers. The dumpers dumper.
That's where you are, the dump from the dumper.
That's where the name's placed. No, man, I'm excited for this. We've done this, the last 2-3 years at this point, and it's a good opportunity, for us to talk shop. I know for me personally, this is like my life's work for about 6 weeks right after the season. So pretty much all October, first half of November is all getting the forecaster out and ready to go. For folks that have already ordered the forecaster through Baseball HQ as a renewal, annual renewal, you got the PDF the day before Thanksgiving, which is always our deadline. And that was nice to hit that. Hard copies will be shipped out sometime next week is the latest I've heard on that. And you can order the forecaster. If you have not ordered the forecaster yet, I am obviously biased. If you've never heard of it, never opened it, I'm biased, but I think it's excellent off-season reading material. I have the PDF up pretty much during every show all off-season. Actually, I got a DM in the Discord the other day from a first-time forecaster reader. I'm not going to say his name because I haven't run this by him, but he says, quote, wanted to tell you my first year getting the forecaster. It's incredible. Tons of great information. I can go look up a player in a slow draft before I make the pick, or especially if I'm deciding between a couple of players. Thank you. So again, that's a first time reader to the forecaster. So if you're interested in ordering the forecaster, it is over at baseballhq.com. There's a link there with Cal Raleigh and you can go click and see what this is all about. So would appreciate you guys doing that.
Yeah, it's awesome. I obviously contribute in season, not to the book, but I use the book tremendously. So I am kind of somewhat biased there as well. And I love the PDF form because, like you said, you can just control F, boom, yep. Gives you what you need. I'm also old, so I use the hard copies to read the actual, like, little, I call them novels, the little articles and research papers in there. And not to mention like the 75 pages of terms you can learn every year. The encyclopedia of stats, I guess, is the way I'll say it. It's probably, I butcher things all the time. That's my job. So that's kind of where it goes. But there's a little bit of everything in there for people. It's really cool. And the other thing I'll mention, especially since we've kind of tongue-in-cheek been bashing the early steamer projections, you get the HQ projections built into the boxes. So that's pretty cool because these guys actually, Ray Murphy has been on the show in previous years.
Yep.
Dude puts a lot of time into like actually caring about the playing time and getting things done. There's a whole crew that does teams that if there's something wrong, they coordinate with the guy. So my point being, very good stuff. So go check.
Yeah. That out. And that's another thing I should have added. You get access to the projection file if you order the forecaster through HQ as well. I use baseball. I don't use it for the Patreon because that's obviously behind it's HQ stuff. It's behind their paywall and, support us, support HQ. But I use baseball HQ's projections in my personal rankings very, very heavily. So yeah, the book is just, it's massive. The player boxes are kind of the bread
right
and butter.
Right behind you, by the way. Right behind you.
Got a stack. Yep. On the other side of my gnome. Player box are the bread and butter. With our first guest, we'll talk about that process. But yeah, I wrote a fab column or a fab research article this year. There's a few other research abstracts in there, prospect stuff. The Encyclopedia of Fanalytics is the proper word for it. Just you can go as deep or as shallow as you want to. So I'll stop talking about it now and we can actually talk some shop with our guests.
All right. So we have two guests on today's shows. The second guest was the returning guest from last year. Highly requested, honestly, because of the knowledge of the foreign world of baseball. So we'll get to him in a bit. But we have a first-timer joining us to talk things here. Ryan mentioned he is I call them the boxes, player boxes, yep. Writers for the forecaster. He also does writing in season. He's going to let you know all about that stuff because There's a lot more people writing for HQ than I probably realize half the time. There's a lot of things going on there. And so we will bring him onto the screen. Zach Larson, thanks for joining us. Welcome to Bubba and the Bloom.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
So before we get into the actual forecaster, I kind of gave a halfway of saying what you do. What all did you do for the forecaster, and do you do for baseball HQ, like in season and whatnot?
So for the forecaster, this is my second year doing the player boxes that Ryan was talking about. I started in 2022, writing strategy articles. I think the first article I wrote was Who Do I Drop? So just kind of a takeaway on, there's a lot of information about who do I add, but then a lot of times, who am I supposed to cut off my team to add these guys is overlooked. So that was actually the piece that I wrote to actually get on with HQ. It was one of the test articles or whatever. So I've been writing strategy. I write a lot of stuff that I write for strategies coming up in the off season. So getting ready for draft prep, stuff like that for different formats. I cover different formats for the NFBC. So I'll be coming out with a category targets article here probably in the next couple weeks. So you can keep your eye out for that. Just kind of help with draft prep. In season, I do the player time analysis for St. Louis Cardinals and Cincinnati Reds. And I also started daily matchups for the pitchers.
That's what I thought. Okay. Yeah. I thought you were on the crew with me over there.
Yeah.
I knew there was a new face this year. I thought it was you. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. And then I guess I'll ask you this much. So you started in 2022 with HQ, and then Ryan, the floor is yours. How long have you been writing for the forecaster? Is this your first year, second year? Where were we at? Is it fourth year?
Yeah, this is my second year writing player boxes. I think I've done some research abstract type stuff that's been carried over from for the season writing into the strategy portion of the forecaster. But this is my second year writing player boxes.
This is a throwing curveball here. How was year one versus year two? I remember my first year. I was so damn overwhelmed with how it would go and what my editor thought of me and that sort of thing. Year two, even, I was still in that same boat. I was just curious how was your psyche going into year one versus year two?
So year one, I think we talked a little bit about this at first pitch, but it was really not, it really knocks your ego down a peg. if you think you know how to write for the forecaster, you learn pretty quick that there's a lot more involved with it, and trying to capture Ron Chandler's style along with you just really have to have your P's and Q's in order statistically and make sure everything aligns with the Encyclopedia of Analytics that you referenced earlier. And it goes through a thorough vetting process. I think it's great for me. It's just great draft prep too. It gets the ball rolling for me and my own personal stuff. But yeah, I mean, if you like deep dives, just know that there's a lot of iterations that go into the final product that the reader sees. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Each one of those iterations. Yeah. You get an email back and forth with your editor. And I always remember, I hope that I see the little present waiting for me under the tree. I open the email. It's like, how long is this feedback going to be? Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. No, I was just going to say, if there was red ink in emails, the world would be out of red ink.
Absolutely. Take us through. Just wanted to, because I know when readers of the forecaster go through, a lot of people go straight to the player boxes first and look at that. For me, it's pretty daunting to get, we get this Excel file with just a blank box and we're supposed to fill it. When you get a new page, when Brandon Cruz, who's your editor, sends you a new page, what's kind of your general process for how you're evaluating a player and how you even want to start kind of the commentary of the box?
So my process is, before I even think about whether I like this guy or not, I really try to remove my own personal bias, whether or not he burned me last year or 2 years ago or 5 years ago or whatever. I go through and I highlight on the Excel sheet, because basically the sheet you get looks exactly like what you read in the Forecaster. It's, you know, all the boxes. I mean, it's just a replica. It's just that commentary box is empty, like you said. So I go through and I highlight where the player was where's either exceptional, good or bad, relative to the cheat sheet that you can find in the Forecaster too. It kind of breaks down MLB averages and then where guys are elite or really substandard. And that kind of builds the foundation for how I want to attack the take on the player. So then after I do that, I'll check RotoWire. I kind of go through the season, see if, you know, get up to date on any injuries, any playing time snafus, if there was weird coaching decisions or whatever might have affected a perceived downturn. You know, just try to kind of build context around that. And then after that, kind of look at historical trends in the Forecaster. I think you've got the last 5 years, maybe, of statistics. So, you know, we'll kind of look at that, make sure that, or, you know, try to identify if there's any trend, if XBA is trending relative to what he's produced, just different things like that, where you can kind of look at what HQ considers to be more predictive metrics and see how those kind of align with what's actually happened. And then I give up my best shot with Brandon or whatever. He was my editor too. So, and then wait for the revisions. So basically that's kind of it in a nutshell though. So.
Yeah. In terms of like the writing itself. So, and I that's pretty similar to my process too. I actually, for every player, I go through the RotoWire thing too. I think it's so important to, as a writer, to these boxes, add context, add flavor to what is a bunch of numbers, which is the rest of the box. So yeah, my typical rule of thumb, any kind of injury pretty much has to get mentioned unless it's some minor thing or maybe minimum stint that didn't affect anything. But in general, I try to do that. For me, the hardest part is always just like, what's the story I want to write? Like, what are the actual words? Like I can see a difference between batting average or expected batting average. I can see a big spike in hit rate or BABIP for those out there. It's just, how do I paint that story? For me is always, still after doing this for 10 plus years, is the hard part. Do you try and like interject? Do you have like a format that you try and go to, like a few sentences at a time? Do you try and interject humor where you can? How do you actually put the words in those box for the first pass?
Well, I will say, as an engineer in a former life, I have that's really what I struggle with, is getting away from the objectivity and go for more of the entertainment value that, you know, that Ron kind of built this product around. Right.
Yep.
And so what kind of drives that for me, I know there's a lot of guys that write for the Forecaster that do a better job than I do, I think, but, and really are kind of interject more humor. If I have a really strong take, and a lot of times this will come up when either there's not a lot to say about the player. If he was really bad, I can really pan him pretty good, but, and it goes, you know, if it's a really good player and everybody knows he's great, you know, you try to find a way to be maybe more entertaining, whenever, you know, if you're talking about Aaron Judge or, you know, Juan Soto, it's like, well, everybody knows they're top players, you know? So, you know, either is there a nit to pick, or, you know, or can we just make it fun? So.
Absolutely.
And trying to compare yourself to the Allens of the world and others is just nowhere to start. So
that's exactly what I was telling
you. Yeah, I knew exactly what you were talking about. So yeah, don't even, I had to trade off ALPT tomorrow 2 years ago with him every other week, and Ryan just laughed. He's like, good luck, buddy. And I'm like, I'm not even trying. Not even gonna try to approach this world.
usually the best, most humorous boxes that, and on the forecaster, it says who writes the page at the bottom in all caps, kind of small writing, but Alan DeLeonardis is always entertaining. Chris Olsen's always entertaining. Brandon's got a bunch of inner stuff. I don't measure up to those guys either in the humor department. They're next level.
All right, let's talk boxes, player boxes. And we like, because, you know, we've joked, like Ryan has joked on the show about it, other people in previous years when we talked to them, it's, you get your sheet, it's a blank sheet with names, and like some players you're like, okay, this is kind of cool to dig into, and then you get like Andrew Pallante or something, and you're like, okay, this is awesome.
I got him. It's like,
oh, he did, really? I was just picturing like a boring, like you got to write about him, but he's boring type guy. We'll start with the positives here, Zach. What were some of your favorite boxes to write about?
So I may have put too many in the notes, but I'll just try to run through them relatively quickly. Willier Abreu was one guy I really liked. I had him on some teams last year, and one of the knocks on him was we didn't know about playing time. And, you know, in a platoon role, you know, volume is going to be a problem potentially. And, you know, he showed that, I mean, he really did make some, you know, some gains in a small sample versus left, which I'm pretty bullish on him this year. I've got a few guys that we will put an up or down projection on some of the boxes that we feel strongly about. He gets an upside for 30 home runs. I think if he can kind of goose that playing those plate appearances up, maybe around 500. I think we've got them projected around 455, something like that.
Yep.
So I think that, you know, I think there's a lot of potential. I mean, he plays in a great park. He's got a good glove. I think there's a path to some maybe unrealized value for Abreu. Another guy that I really liked, Francisco Alvarez. He's probably my favorite buy in that kind of mid-tier catcher range. So he's another guy that I've got up an upside of 30 home runs on. If he can kind of continue what he did in the second half, it seemed like there were a lot of parallels between what he was doing in 2023 and what he was doing in the second half of last year. So if that can carry through with more volume, I mean, I think kind of the sky's the limit for this guy. I mean, obviously a really talented guy, got pedigree. So I don't know. And then one of my favorite boxes I'll mention quickly, Eric Fetty. I'm a Cardinals fan. It's not Fetty's. I'm not angry with Fetty, but it's a lot of misdirected hostility between Fetty and former GM John Mozeliak for not getting rid of these guys and letting some of the new guys come up and pitch on a team that wasn't going anywhere. I mean, I think it was pretty clear to most of the fan base, but I don't know, the Cardinals, I think we're glad to turn the, or a lot of guys I talked to are glad to turn the page on that. So Eric Fetty played for three teams. I think that says it all. DFA'd three times. Not good.
Yeah. Yeah, you let him
might have been the KBO.
Exactly. Hey, that's somewhat of a segue to Tom later on. But yeah, you let Fetty have it. I can tell you've got some Cardinals fans. Yeah. So the words dreadful. I'm looking at the box now. The words dreadful and horrific are in there. Hard pass is in there. Yeah. Squinting through a welding mask is in there. That's
impressive right there. Squinting through a welding mask.
That's pretty good stuff on Fetty. One thing, and we'll get to your toughest boxes. Really good point on going back to Willier Abreu. For folks that are kind of looking through the forecast or kind of fingering through it, we have these columns, OPS and VL and VR plus. They're really nice because it's scaled to league average. So like I personally, off the top of my head, I don't know what a league average OPS is, but what we do in the forecaster is we scale it all with that plus to say that 100 is league average. Anything below is worse than league average, and anything above obviously is higher than league average. And it is nice to see with Willier Abreu, like that VL plus. So his OPS against lefties went from 75 up to 96, which is almost league average. And you correctly, Zach, mentioned that it is a small sample against lefties, but it's a good point that especially for an age 27 guy like Willy Abreu, that could be a path to more playing time. So just wanted to kind of dive a little bit deeper into that VL plus and VR plus if you're looking at the forecaster, what that means. Let's flip over, Zach, to some of your toughest boxes. What were some of those guys?
Okay, so these toughest boxes, I got three guys here, and they're all kind of on here for different reasons. So CJ Abrams is my first guy, and as we were talking about going through the iterative editorial process, I was really high on CJ Abrams for this coming year, and I was wanting to, he's been pretty good. I mean, a 23rd guy is nothing to shake a stick at, right? But I was really trying to, kind of push the, maybe he's a $35 player where, that would be well above what he's done up to this point. And Brandon, my editor, he really was kind of pushing back on me a little bit. And so it was kind of more, it was kind of tough just for us to kind of reconcile kind of where I wanted to land on him and where, he was kind of speaking more from kind of, when Ron and, as it moves up the chain, we don't want to put anything on there that's too out there for him. So,
yeah.
So that was one challenging box, and it just happened to be the very first player.
I was going to say, Abram, that's probably the first on page box one, of any right, hitter. Right. Yeah, yep. Page one, yep. God.
Yeah, so, off to a good start, right?
The second half falls are crazy, actually. I'm looking at the box right now. That's a massive drop-off in the second half. Wow.
Yeah.
That stands out.
Another one, Ozzie Albies. So I think I was burned on Albies, and this was probably back in 2022 when I drafted him. And I think he was hurt. I think he just had a myriad of injuries that year. And I think this was one where I kind of had to overcome my own personal bias and, talk about, while Albies maybe isn't my favorite player, I doubt I will draft him. You do have to talk about the good points on some of these guys. And Albies is still a really good player, right? Especially in a second base pool that's not necessarily outstanding. So going back and forth with Brandon on that one, I think I got to cautious optimism, which was difficult for me to write, but I think it does kind of capture, where we probably can land on Albies, I think, this year. And David Festa is my third one. A guy I absolutely loved last year and obviously did not pan out for any of the investors, right? This was kind of a challenge of kind of disassociating how I kind of still feel. Like, I'm still in on Festa this year. I mean, obviously at a much reduced price, it won't be nearly as painful as I think he was around maybe a 300 pick maybe last year in DCs.
It was something like that. He was pretty cheap.
Right. And so just kind of trying to write about what did we actually see and not, what we still hope to find out about him. Wish casting, I think, is a popular term for that. So those were three of my tougher ones for different reasons. But
I want to add something to that for people that may be new to the forecaster. Ryan opened my eyes to it when we were talking, just texting the other day. When you look at the forecaster boxes, the first half, second half is legit first half, second half. It's not like after the All-Star break, like you get on, say, Fangraphs or something. It's like the actual half season split.
Yep.
So the numbers will look different than if you're searching on Fangraphs or something, but it also gives more of a legit first half, second half feel. So I want to bring that up real quick because I was confused for a second when I was talking with Ryan, and it made a ton more sense real quickly to this dummy over here when he mentioned it to me. So I wanted to mention that. So that's why it stood out more when you look at guys like Ozzie Albies, who benefited or had a better second half than Abrams, who struggled in the second half. It's for literally like 3 months of the season. So
yep,
bringing that up. All right. one thing that's I enjoy a lot about doing content, be it written, podcasting, taking in content, whatever, is we will do the work and all of a sudden, like, either good or bad, we'll talk about both shortly, something clicks and goes, oh, interesting, like, didn't know about so-and-so player or something. So when you were doing your boxes, are there now guys after researching that you're higher on after writing your boxes based on some of the work you did?
Yeah, there were, and that's rarely a surprise. It's, it happened last year when I was going through the forecaster. I was explaining earlier, you kind of have a bias that you can never get away from whenever you're looking at these guys, and, yeah, and doing the deep dive is a good way to, see how you feel about your biases after looking at that. And, I'll just run through a few guys. Willie Adames, I was pretty skeptical about, his first year in San Francisco. Not terrible, but obviously not up to snuff with what he was doing in Milwaukee. But, I was kind of leaning against, just mostly due to the ballpark. But, he kind of opened my eyes. I think he's actually a pretty good buy, especially considering the cost at shortstop. Colton Kowser, I loved him last year. Injury riddled season. I've got the upside tag on him for 30 home runs this year, I think, in an improved Baltimore offense that's just added Pete Alonso too. So.
Mm-hmm. And Taylor Ward. That's also Taylor one Ward. Thing I do want to bring up is we rewrite these boxes back in pretty much in October. And we're actually pretty much told not to focus on playing time and that sort of thing, just because so much can change, and really focus on the skills. So that is one thing that and not to down the Kowser, because I see where you get to the up 30 home runs pretty easily, actually. It's just we don't know what that Baltimore outfield is going to look like when we write the boxes. So.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. I mean, we're kind of, and as you said, Ryan, we're kind of instructed to not necessarily look at these players in a vacuum, but with team context and all that, all those things can change, especially when you're going through the off season and things change. Things life comes at you fast and over the winter months. So that's a really good point. And I'm still buying Kowser, even with Ward there, but I can understand it. Some might view that as kind of a rain cloud on the horizon, maybe for him. But Baltimore's got a lot of young talent too. So mm-hmm. We'll see kind of how that shakes out, but there's a lot of uncertainty, but that could also create buying opportunities when there's uncertainty. So, another guy that I'm higher on, Ryan Helsley, for similar reasons, being a Cardinals fan, kind of burned us, not being able to trade him at peak value, but, then he goes to New York and struggles, and now, opportunity with Baltimore. So we'll see. Fairbanks, I'd been out on him for a long time, and he was he with the injury concerns and everything. He was just a hard guy to trust, but I think he's kind of proven that he's pretty reliable as far as closers go, anyway. So he's a guy that I kind of liked. Flaherty and Gallen are real close in draft champions ADP right now in the 220s. And I thought I was totally out on Gallen, and it seemed like I was maybe a little bit too harsh. More warts, but a lock for volume, I think. And Flaherty, he's got an A health grade, which I didn't know would be possible for him.
Given
his time in St. Louis. So I think he's a guy with another guy with volume that could return.
I love your Flaherty write-up. I think it's beautiful. I think more people should accept the fact he's good. And I'm just
because Jack Flaherty is in our Discord in Enigma, because there were a lot of pissed off people about the surface stats of Jack Flaherty, and Bubba and I are like, we're trying to not trying to keep the peace, but we're saying it's all good. I think we actually think Flaherty is still pretty good. So reading your box on Flaherty now, I 100%, man. Who would you take between Flaherty and Gallen?
Flaherty, pretty easily, I think, for me. So
smart, man. I love between the hair, the beard, and now that
too. That's right.
I haven't made my hair joke quite yet, but we'll
you're outnumbered, buddy. I'd keep it simple.
3-1 on this show.
So. Yes. Oh, good stuff.
For me, the one that stands out was Shane Boz. Is one of who I was totally off last year, and just kind of going through, it's like, I can't stay healthy, hasn't done anything. And similar to what you were just saying, Zach, is like, you get to the box, I see Shane Boz, I'm like, this guy's garbage, I'm gonna try. And then, you know, you turn that bias off, look at the actual numbers, and I was like, holy crap, I think I gave Boz an upside at the end of the day, upside 25 ERA. You never know, but that's something you have to shut off, to what you were saying,
right.
So. And to think, I thought it's because I talked about him at FPAS. No, it's because of the box.
Okay. All right. And then, a couple guys, Zach, on the flip side, guys that, you know, you're lower on than you thought you'd be when you started writing them up.
Okay. So a couple guys I was lower on, Roman Anthony. I'm like a lot of people. I play Dynasty. Obviously, you know, he's been a hot property for years, and I just think the price is just too high for me, for a guy. I think we're projecting, I think he's got a 16 home run, 11 stolen base projection in the forecaster. So, fourth round in a 15 team league for that, I'm not sure. I'll let somebody else take him, I guess is what I'm saying. Ronald Acuna is a hard guy to say that you're lower on. I look at the 634 plate appearances over the last two seasons, and that it just makes me a little bit nervous for a guy going in the first round. I mean, he's obviously, we've seen, number one player overall, and there's no doubt that he could do that again. But if it comes to me in the back half of the first round, there might be another player that I want there. So, Jordan Alvarez. So I think I heard a Mike Trout comparison. I don't know. This was probably 3 or 4 years ago, just with the bat. And I have been burned by him numerous times after that. He's been a hard guy for me to quit. Even when he was only UT eligible, then when he got outfield, it seemed like even a better buy. And now he's back to UT eligible only. And I think I'm passing on him. I've had in a few slow drafts opportunities to take him where I felt like he slipped, and I just can't. I think I'm over it. Carlos Estevez is another guy. The ADP, I'm like a lot of guys. I don't like closers. I don't like saves in general. I wish they didn't exist, but they do. So we are forced to overpay for guys that it's just with Estevez, it just seems like you're paying for last year for a career season. I was talking to Brandon, the editor, when I was writing this box, and we were talking about it. I said, I think I'd rather have Jeremiah Estrada at his price than Carlos Estevez at his, or a similar guy. Of course, with Suarez getting moved today, that makes it a little bit more interesting maybe, but and then Jose Ferrer is my last guy. Obviously, he looked like he was in line for saves with Washington. Now it looks like he'll be a mid reliever at best with Seattle, as things stand now, with a couple guys with probably better skills ahead of him. I still like Ferrer as a pitcher, but as a lefty, he just looks like he'll be a lefty specialist, and that's not worth a lot in fantasy.
Yep. So, and obviously something you know too, and well, you don't know when you're writing it is, yeah, you assume Ferrer's going to still be on Washington, but you have no idea. Just real quick, and then Bubba, I'll toss it over to you. But we do have, again, if you're kind of newer to the forecaster, we have these A through F reliability grades for each player. It's health, playing time, and consistency. Ronald Acuna Jr. has an F for health and an F for consistency. And actually, Matt Cederholm, who does a lot of the data stuff for the Forecaster in the essay section, he did a nice kind of little update on the performance of some of these health grades over the last few years. And it's really eye-opening to see how well that tracks. So I haven't looked up Yordan Alvarez. I'm assuming he has.
I just did. He has an F. He has an F health, but he has a C consistency because I wanted to see if he matched up because he's, you know, you support him at least. So I was curious.
But yeah, if you're going and drafting off those reliability grades, which, you know, you don't want to solely, you know, draft off of one thing or the other, but taking a first round pick with F and two out of the three is with Acuna. It's I don't know, it could work. But it's just something to consider there.
Yep. Absolutely.
I have one last question for you, Zach, before I think we wrap up your segment of the show. And it's a question that Ryan likes to ask, like, our Discord and other people. I might even tweet it out. I can't remember. And you're a writer now, so it might be different over the last few years. But when you get the Forecaster, what's the first thing you look for?
Oh, I think I just read Ron's write-up first. I love his writing. I've got all of his books, I think. So I think he just came out with another one too. Shameless plug for him. But and then after that, I dive right to the research abstracts. I think there's a lot of great writing in there. It's just really interesting. It's really good food for thought for me writing for strategy to try to kind of pique my interest and get kind of the juices flowing on what kind of different strategy stuff I can write about in the upcoming season. So it's probably the first two.
Nope. Makes a ton of sense indeed. So we will wrap it up there. Appreciate you joining us. Great chatting with you. Good to match all this up. Looking forward to checking out more of them because reading the boxes as you were talking about players, you write more in my voice because I try to be funny. I can't write funny at all. It doesn't work.
Try is always the operative word.
Hey, no one said I'm always right, but at least I'm usually honest. So take that those words for however you want to use those. But Zach, appreciate you joining us, and we'll have to chat again sometime.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys. It's been a real blast.
Absolutely. Right. And anyone who's a current Baseball HQ subscriber, Zach also is writing some of our Dynasty Reload columns. I believe your National League outfield is out already for Baseball HQ subs. And then you'll have a National League pitcher one that's coming out soon. And Bubba's on that roster. Does anyone want to guess what position Bubba did for Dynasty Reload?
Go out on a limb.
Yeah, no, it's a great series, and your NL outfield piece was really good, Zach. So well done, man. Well,
thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Yep. All righty. With that transition, we will get ready for our second guest of the show, joining us once again, as he did last season, to educate us on all things overseas. He had some hot takes like Sagano better than Sasaki last year. That panned out, and much, much more. You can find him on Twitter at Baseball Stringer with no E at the end, STRINGR. Tom Mulhall, how are you doing, our friend?
Guys, I'm delighted to be back on my Tied for Favorite podcast, along with Sleeper in the Bust with Paul Spohr and Dustin Mason. I like my podcasters to look like the number 10 when they're walking down the street. And those are the two podcasts that get that done for me. So let you know, and that's from a fellow round guy. All the great teams in entertainment history have been a round guy and a skinny guy. You got Laurel and Hardy. You got, George and Jerry. And we got Ryan and Bubba. So I'm delighted to be here.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, man.
That's beautiful. I love everything about that. Welcome back. Appreciate that.
Most requested.
Yeah.
Highly requested. I want a raise.
Checks in the mail, Tom.
surprisingly, your segment last year was popular. So we actually did decide to bring you back.
Who knew?
So imagine that.
Who knew?
Really appreciate you, Tom, having you on. I know we like to bust each other's chops, but you do some awesome work for the Forecaster, and that's what we're here to talk about. So
yes, sir.
Yeah, it's great stuff because I know we talked about it last season. We can dig in a little bit this year. We want to focus more this year with you because there's a handful of names to discuss, actually. But over the years now, it seems like it's more and more waves are coming from overseas, where it used to be a sprinkle here, maybe more speculation on long term. Now it's like every year. You mentioned it even last year. There's a handful coming. We got a bunch this year, and there's even more that are close coming back type thing,
right,
in the next couple of years. So what you're doing there is even more important. Like, it's because these are actually fantasy impact players, where in the past, one or two, like Ichiro would be great, but then for every Ichiro, there was like five or six that were like, okay, yeah, it was cool while it lasted type thing. So, yeah.
I mean, that was something in the book. I mean, when I was editing your essay, Tom, I mean, you literally put this in the book, quote, "We may be on the verge of six to eight impact players making the move to Major League Baseball every season."
Well, that stood out to me. That's amazing. Right.
Yeah.
I've been kind of predicting, or maybe hoping, for years. I've been saying this for years, but if you think about it, we've already got three signed. We got Anthony Kay, and Drew Anderson came over from the Asian leagues, and Cody Ponce. So that's three. And then we've got four that have already been posted. They haven't signed yet, and they may not be signed. I think all four of them will be. So that's seven. That's seven that probably, of the seven, I think about five of them are going to be fairly impactful. And I'm not saying they're going to be, you know, perennial all-stars, but they're going to have an impact. And if you are smart and get on those guys early, I think this is an area where the dynasty players can really catch up. If you are not very good at prospects, and prospects are such a hit and miss thing. I remember Profar was hands down the number one prospect for several years running, and he did not have a Hall of Fame career. But let me give you an example. I pulled out the 2022 Forecaster. And if you were a dynasty player and you had no idea what you were doing in a new dynasty league, but you only knew you weren't very good at prospects, and you had just blindly taken the 10 guys that I recommended, here's who you'd have on your team today. Are you ready? You would have, you'd have Senga. You'd have Robert Suarez. You'd have Zagano. You'd have Saya Suzuki. You'd have Yamamoto. Damn. Now, I don't know who you drafted dynasty players with your final 10 picks back there, but I doubt you got anybody who has the impact that Yamamoto and Suzuki have. And Senga has been good. Whenever he's healthy, he's good. And actually, there's another name on that list of 10 who I think will be here next year. So to hit on five of those 10 late picks, those could have been your final 10 dynasty picks. To hit on five of those guys, to me, that's amazing. I think it's the Ohtani effect. All the players over there now want to come over to the major leagues, and Ohtani's shown it could be done. They all want to play with and against Ohtani. He's a generational talent. We're never going to see his like again. And he has just changed the game. And what you're seeing now is teams that never posted before, like Giants, they're Yumiura Giants. They had never posted. They only posted twice in their entire history. They just posted their team captain, that Okamoto. That was their team captain. And it used to be that they would wait till the penultimate year in the contract, the year before they became a free agent, and then they would post them. Now you're seeing them posted way earlier. And I just think this is a really a field that it's going to, if not explode, I don't think we're going to see where it's a trickle again. I think we're going to have six or seven this year. I think we're going to have six or seven next year. So beautiful. We shall see, but they might have to start getting somebody competent to cover this in the forecaster. it might be
getting that rules you out.
I'm out, man. Well, I'll slam the money on the table.
Real quick, I want to go back to one of the first things you said in that part there, Tom, is if people were smart enough to draft people early, like if telling someone in, say, October and like round 25 of an early draft to take would that have been a smart thing to do if that person did that, or is that just a foolish thing to pass on it? I'm just trying to put that together real quick for the listeners.
If someone had been recommended to take him and passed on it, that would have been a mistake that I think they regret. It's all a crapshoot. But you know, even that too early meatball draft that you're talking about. Where Ryan passed on him.
Yeah, so I'm that quote unquote someone who ignores Tom's advice in the meatball draft. Emi went in the what's the correct way to pronounce it? Is it Emi?
Emi. Okay. Emi.
Emi went in the, I think, the 35th round of that draft.
Yeah.
And you told me to draft him, and I didn't.
You did not.
So, but I had to twist that knife.
His ADP is 157 right now.
Yeah. Well, he's gone in the top 100 as well. He has gone in the top 100.
Yeah. And once they sign, that's going to go up. It always does. Ponce went up 50 spots after he signed. He went from nowhere to, he's still at 342, which means you can get him for nothing.
Yep.
So
let's get into the players, because there's a lot of them you mentioned this year, and we'll maybe hit a few for the future. So let's start with I already told Ryan the other night, we went through this. I'm like, I'm going to butcher this so bad. Tatsuya Emi, as you just said, what should we know about him? Because if some people are taking him in the top 100, around 150, like, this guy better be good, is all I'm saying.
I think he is. I like Emi a lot. And again, because the pronunciations are something we're not used to, I might spell these guys' names occasionally, but it's Imai, Tatsuya. And Emi is going 157 right now. That's about the 10th round in a 15-team mix. I actually think that's about right. He is being drafted around, and I ran the ADPs for the last 10 days. These are the pitchers going right before him and right after him. You got Drew Rasmussen, Zach Wheeler, and then right after him, Sandy Alcantara, and your boy, Luis Castillo. Now, that's a pretty good company. It worries me that once he signs, especially if he signs with the Yankees, he's going to get that bounce, he's going to go up a round or two. And at that point, I'm a little bit worried about it. He's got a real funny delivery. It's not quite sidearm, but it is not over the top at all. It's his arm angle's about halfway between those two. He's a good one. He's really good. I don't think he's good as Imamaga, but I think he's good. It worries me that if he signs for with the Yankees, that he's going to get too much helium. But I like him. And if you've already got him on a team that you drafted early, you're going to be very happy. I think you're going to be very happy.
That covers it pretty well. And I know Tom won't say this, but I'll say it on his behalf. Just because Tom covers these guys in detail doesn't mean he hypes all these guys up to the point where you shouldn't draft him. Tom was actually one of the bigger, I remember doing this show last year, bigger detractors from Roki Sasaki, at least for 2025 season. Kind of warning us not to buy into that helium with Sasaki last year, and that paid off for a bunch of us. So
he went. I saw him go in the third round.
He was he was going,
and it settled down to about the fifth round, which is about where I would have considered taking him. But he's going to be fine long term. And by the way, I think he's going to rebound this year. So if you're looking for somebody His ADP right now is 212.
Really low.
212. He's down there with Aaron Nola and with Boz, who I know you like. But yeah, but I really like him. I like him long term a lot. I just didn't like him last year because of his injuries issues.
Yep.
And I think actually what I said is I didn't like Sugano over Vasaki. I like Sugano where he was going better than I liked where Roki was going. Sugano was going for, he was in the 300s. And I looked like a genius for about the first month. He had a 3.0 ERA about 10 games in. And I looked like, well, I am going to ask for a raise. I am a genius. And then, of course, he completely fell apart. But I think that was a rest issue. I think that's something you're going to have to watch with Emi. I would consider benching Emi a week or so before the All-Star break. And I would consider benching the last couple of weeks of the season. But it's a real transition for those guys pitching.
All right. Good point. Let's flip over to the hitter side. This is one where I actually did listen to you, Tom.
He did.
Yes. when we were doing our Bubba and the Bloom live gladiator draft, you were in the chat imploring me to take Munetaka Murakami at third base. Murakami's going. You'll get your general thoughts on him, but just to kind of paint the context here, Murakami over the last month, like a 234 ADP going right next to like Caleb Durbin. And right before Mark Vientos and Brett Beatty. So that kind of grouping of players for Murakami. So with that in mind, what's your outlook on Murakami?
Yeah,
what's
Santana. He's going around Santana, Spencer Steer, just to give you an idea of the hitters. You know, he's really an interesting guy. He's a guy who won their Triple Crown at age 22 in 2022 with 56 home runs. And, of course, everybody starts saying, oh, he's the Japanese Babe Ruth, 56 home runs. And the next 2 years, he struggled. Now, struggled means he hit 30 or 35. So he didn't really struggle, but his batting average did kind of collapse. And there's a real split among people with regard to his batting, his swing and miss. There's a lot of swing and miss in this guy. I don't think he's going to hit 50, and I don't think he's going to hit 20. I think he is going to have a period of adjustment. I think long term he's going to be an interesting guy. And the forecaster, he's not Kyle Schwarber. I see a lot of Kyle Schwarber comparisons. He could be, the ceiling, I think, is a Kyle Schwarber light, and which is pretty darn good. I think he'll settle in around 240, 250 batting average, a good on-base percentage. He's got a very good batting eye for a guy who misses a lot, but he's got a great on-base percentage. He's a real problem for him is he is an absolute butcher on defense. He's going to qualify as a third baseman. He ain't going to play third base in the major leagues. Okay, let me tell you. I'm not going to play third base in the major leagues. You're not playing third base in the major leagues, and I just don't see it. Now, maybe he will, maybe he won't, but I think he, you know, the worst thing he could do was on top of all the other transitions that he's got to make, a new pitcher, new country, new language, new food, then they're going to throw him out there where he is really not a very good defender, and they're going to have that problem too. And he's got to learn how to hit the fastball, which is you don't see a lot of in Japan. Their fastball is about 2 miles slower than our fastball. I don't think that's a major adjustment. A lot of people are throwing up their hands and running around like SpongeBob and Bob and, you know, oh, my God. And I think he'll be fine, especially long term. But he is going to have a period of adjustment. I think the schemer projection on him is 227 for a batting average. I think he's going to do a little tiny bit better than that. I'm thinking maybe 240 with a little bit of luck. I like where they've got him on base. They've got him at 330 on base percentage. I like that. They've got him at 24 home runs. I kind of like that. I think that's doable. 20 to 25 is what I'm thinking. 8 stolen bases. I don't think he's going to get 8 stolen bases. They've got him as hitter 138. They've got him down there with Nolan Arenado and Lawrence Butler and Sal Frelick and Brett Batty. I like him better than I think all of those guys, although I like Butler. But I think he'll be fine. I don't, you know, some guy said, he's going to be Joey Gallo. I said, what the heck's wrong with Joey Gallo? He was a pretty good player up to his last three seasons where he was terrible. I don't think he's last three season Joey Gallo. And I don't think he's Babe Ruth, and I don't think he's going to hit 56 home runs over here. But I think he's going to have some growing pains. But I think eventually, long term, he's going to be very solid. I think he could have a Josh Donaldson-type career. You know, 240, 250 batting average, decent on-base percentage, mid-20s, home runs. I think Josh Donaldson is a comp that I made in – one of my articles. So I like him. And he's going to qualify. He should qualify at third, which if you have not looked, I guess you guys have looked at third. And maybe we could play third base in the major leagues looking at our competition. Great, it's brutal.
It's rough. That's why I think these guys are coming over, licking their chops to get paid, knowing that it's an opening. Because we'll hit on the next one. Kazuma Okamoto.
Okamoto.
He's another mighty corner oak. Infield target. So
yeah. What do we got? The Mighty Oak. I'm mighty like that oak. Girl. Mighty Oak.
They always have great nicknames.
I'm like the girl in what's it? Mean Girls, where she was trying to make Fetch happen.
Yeah, I'm trying
to make that happen. So I want you guys to start referring to him as Big Oak. The Mighty Oak.
I love my nickname. So yeah, I'll roll with it.
Well, I really like this guy. And it was interesting that when I was watching your live draft, and Murakami went, and one of the guys said, you know who I think might have a better year than Murakami? And almost instantly, three of your patrons said Okamoto. And he's a little bit more finished. He's a little bit better hitter all around. He's a guy who played for their most popular team. He's used to the spotlight. I don't think he's going to be expected to carry a team. His defense is adequate. I don't think it's stellar, but it's adequate to play third base in the major leagues. He won 2 gold gloves in Japan, but that's a little misleading. They have a tendency to give their gold glove to, like, all right, who's the best hitter who's also a good defender? You don't see many guys who hit 210 win the gold glove in Japan. I don't care how good they are. It happens, but not often. Usually it's a guy on a popular team, but he has won 2. So he's adequate. He could stick at third. And I think the steamer projection is a little bit low on. They've got him at 251 for a batting average. I think he could beat that. They've got him for 17 home runs. I think that's pretty good. The comp for me for Okamoto is Alex Baum. Now, some people like turn their nose up at Alex Baum. I'm the president of the Alex Baum fan club. Now, admittedly, that's because nobody else will take the job.
I was going to say, how many members are in that thing?
There's me and his mom.
And Mrs. Baum.
And Mrs. Baum. Mother Baum. Yeah. But he is a very serviceable player. He's going to hit 270. He's going to hit 15 to 20 home runs. He's going to get 70-75 RBIs, 70-75 runs. And right now, Okamoto is going ADP 299. Now, that will soar. That probably will go up 50 slots at some point once he's signed. But his ADP right now, he's going around Ryan O'Hearn and Matt Wallner and Evan Carter. I would hands down rather have Okamoto than those three guys. I think he's going to be fine. I think he's going to be a good one. I think he's going to be a good mid-level $15 player in your mixed league. There's nothing wrong with that.
Not at all.
Especially if you're drafted now and you're getting now at 299.
Next guy we'll talk about who has already signed. And actually, real quick, we haven't really talked about this, but with Imai Murakami and Okamoto, you're very confident all three are going to sign?
Sugano actually tried to sign 2 years before he did sign. They actually posted him and nobody offered him a contract. And right. he went back and pitched in Japan right. and did very well. And then he came back and got a contract. I think they're all going to get signed. To me, the one that I was most worried about signing was Ponce. Imai is going to get signed. Yeah.
And let's talk about Ponce.
Him. Yeah. Yeah.
Ponce is already, you talk about like some of these guys and their ADP is going to soar. Looking at yeah. our ADP tracker, Cody Ponce, who signed with the Blue Jays, 3-year, $30 million deal. His ADP over the last month in 15 teamers was 375. Over the last week, it's up to 315. So it's already right. a 60-point jump.
60-point jump.
Since Ponce crazy. Signed. So, crazy. So, yeah, what's your take on Cody Ponce?
Well, and signing with the Jays helps. You know, that helps sure. a lot.
Yep.
So this is a guy who was terrible in the major leagues. He wasn't very good in Japan. And somehow the light bulb went on in Korea. So he was in the Korean League. And, man, when that light bulb went on, it went on. Let me flip over here to my notes on him. But he had a 1.89 ERA, 0.94 whip. He had 252 strikeouts, which was a record for the KBO, the Korean League. He had one game where he struck out 18 guys in one game, also a league record. What do you always look for when one of these guys has these seasons out of nowhere? Was it just a fluke or did he do something? And he did do something. He got serious about his training. He added a couple miles to his fastball. He picked up a new pitch. There's reason to believe there's something there. Now, I don't think he's not going to have a 1.89 ERA in the major leagues. Steamer has him at 4.01. I think that's about right. I think that's about right. They've got him for 152 innings pitch. I think that's probably about right. I like him. I think he's going to be an adequate number four starting pitcher. There is a danger that he can't cut it and he's going to go into middle or long relief and a swing man. He could go back and forth in and out of the rotation, but they seem very high on him. So I think he's worth it. I think he's worth a gamble in the 300s. He was going around Reed Detmers, Sean Manaea, Braxton Ashcroft. I think I'd gamble on Ponce before I'd gamble on any of those guys. But he is a gamble. He is a gamble. But I like him. They've also got him ahead of Imanaga, which I don't get at all. I think if Imanaga is healthy, I'm looking for a big rebound from him as well.
Okay, good. So, I hope you're right.
Yeah, we're big Shota fans around here, so hopefully that bounce back takes place. But
yeah,
let's go to another, I believe, corner infielder here from the KBO in Sung Moon Song. Now,
yeah.
That's a name right there, folks. Like you could have nicknames for days. What do we have to look forward to here?
When you're just talk about Korean players very quickly. When you're doing your own research on these guys, they put the family name first. So if you're doing an internet search and you see it as Song Sun Mun, it's the same guy. It's just they reverse their names. Major League Baseball puts out some sort of a style sheet at the beginning of every year. And that's where they standardize the spelling of the names. Ohtani used to be O-T-A-N-I, and then they decided it's going to be O-H-T-A-N-I. And they'll do the same thing for these. When you do this research on Song, you'll see all sorts of variations. I saw Sung Moon, M-O-O-N, Song. Right now, it looks like they're going to go with Sung, S-U-N-G, dash M-U-N, then last name Song. And he's an interesting guy. Hitters don't usually make the transition as well from the Asian leagues as pitchers do. And hitters from the Korean League, even less so. We saw how Kim struggled a little bit out there in Los Angeles. He came out like a house on fire, and then he kind of slowed down a lot. Now, I think, as an aside, I think Kim is going to rebound as well. I think he's going to have 30 stolen bases this year. But Song was
Is this Ha-Seong Kim of the
Braves? Yes.
Okay.
Yes. With the, no. Ha-Seong Kim of the Dodgers.
Oh, the Dodgers. Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
I think he's going to have 30 stolen bases this year.
Okay.
The other Kim could also have 20 or 30 stolen bases, but Song was a guy who was a five category. He had 26 home runs, 25 stolen bases, 315 batting average. He can play a couple positions. He's a perfect utility player. He played for a team called the Heroes, which is a great name. He played for the Heroes. A lot of his fellow teammates are now playing in America. The two Kims, Jung Hoo Lee of the Giants is here. So they're a team that posts. Kim of Los Angeles is really pushing the Dodgers. He's to sign him. He's tweeting it out. I like him. I think he's going to be good. I don't think he's going to be great. I think he's going to, I hate to say it, I think he's going to be a pretty effective utility player. But I like him. I like him. I just am not sure. He's going to be another guy that I think might take a year or two to adjust. And a lot of these guys do. They do.
Last guy that is, in terms of overseas, this was in the NPB, was Kona Takahashi. Right-handed pitcher. You've got in the forecaster, you say he could be a serviceable number three starting pitcher, or he could struggle to stay in the rotation. High risk, medium reward. So we're going down a little bit on the ladder here, but probable ETA of 26. Is this someone you think
he's
could
been
sign
posted.
Over?
Okay. He's been posted.
Okay,
gotcha. He hadn't been signed yet. I wish I hadn't said serviceable number three. I wish I'd said serviceable number four. I really am not a big fan. The good news is he's not even showing up on the ADP. You can get him for nothing right now. He's been up and down the last couple of years. He's struggled. He's got a decent fastball, but he's never been a big strikeout pitcher. He's like I shouldn't generalize. He's like so many of the Japanese pitchers where he will have three or four really good pitches. And he does. He's got three or four good ones. He's got a slider and a cutter, forkball. His fastball's good, but he just doesn't seem to be a strikeout pitcher. He's really up and down. I could see him. He'd need a lot of luck for him to be a serviceable number three. It could happen. I worry more. I think it's more likely he's going to be a five. And maybe out of the rotation altogether. I'm not going to have many shares of Kona Takahashi. He's one that I would put a caution flag on.
Okay. Kona Takahashi has only been taken in three draft champions drafts over the last 20 or so. So
right.
In the last few rounds of the draft.
Right.
So.
And that's his mom, his brother, and his uncle.
Yeah.
And there's a really good young pitcher named Hiroto Takahashi.
Right. Are they related?
Next
the
year.
Other Takahashi?
I don't know. No.
Okay.
I think that's a really good, if you're on a dynasty, that's the guy to grab. I think he is a really good young pitcher. I think he could be a future number two. He looks like the next Yamamoto to me. That's what I'm looking at. What I wrote about him in the forecaster, you know, could be the next Yamamoto. I'm out there on a limb when I said that. I don't know what got into me.
Well, you did phrase it as could he be, as with a question.
Could
so
he?
It wasn't
yeah.
definitive with
right.
with Hiroto right. Takahashi, but yeah.
But I like it. I like
a couple
it.
guys that have signed already. You have Anthony Kay and Drew Anderson. A lot of people have asked, who are these guys? But they kind of reinvented themselves overseas. You see much of a fantasy impact from either one?
No.
Perfect.
Next.
Answers that question real nice. Yep.
Hey, it's good to know because
Yeah.
It's
I like Kay.
you know, let me pull up my notes on Kay real quick.
But as Zach said in his earlier in the show with his Eric Fetty box, which is that has some carryover here. Yeah. It's good to avoid the landmines as much as it is to have the breakout. But
you know what? Fetty had a pretty good first season.
He did
over here. When he came back over, Fetty really took people by surprise. He had a good year. Kay is a former first round selection, but he signed with the White Sox. So pass, unless he gets traded, and which is what they could have, you know, they could have signed. Drew Anderson, man, he signed with Detroit. He's got a lot of trouble against lefties. It could happen, but I think the ceiling for those guys is an adequate number four, and I think they're probably both going to be swing men, long relief, in and out of the rotation. I don't think I'm going to have either one of those guys on any of my rosters.
Okay, perfect. Just to round this out, we mainly focus on you know, here at Bubba and the Bloom on redraft and 2026 drafts. Wanted to give a shout to the keeper and dynasty folk out there. Who do you think, Tom, for 2027 and beyond, outside of, we already talked about Hiroto Takahashi, who you say might be a solid number two starting pitcher with an ETA of 2027. What are some other names that keeper dynasty folks might want to look at for 2027 and beyond?
There's a young pitcher, Shunpata Yamashita, and that's Shunpeita. Shunpata is his first name. Yamashita is his last name. It means under the mountain in Japanese. Isn't that cool? I wish I had something like that. But yeah, there's your nicknames for you. He is spectacular when he's healthy, but he's a young guy. He's just 23. He needs a little bit more experience. He needs to get his, you know, health under control. The comparisons I see on him are Ohtani, the pitcher. So right away, you got my attention. When you start comparing him to Ohtani, I just think Shunpeita Yamashita is a good one. And I like Hiroto Takahashi, too. Those two guys would be the two guys. There's a young guy in Korea, but I'm holding up on him. I'm not sure if he's going to be. He was a guy who went a really great rookie year, but then he had a terrible second year. He had a lot of injuries, so we'll wait on him. But those are two guys. If I had two picks for next year, if I'm in a dynasty or a keeper league where maybe you have 10 keepers, I might take one of my keeper spots on one of those guys. And if I was in a dynasty league, I'd do everything I could to grab both of them.
Okay. And that's Hiroto Takahashi and Shunpeita Yamashita for those two.
Yes.
Beautiful. Well, good stuff as always, Tom. It's a pleasure chatting it up with you. The Asian swing is it's pretty impressive that keeps coming through here. And like when you were talking, like I was looking through the forecaster and there's about 15 to 18 more between 27 and 28 expectations, to your point, that are still hanging out there. So I think you have job security for a few more years at least.
I love it. I need it.
Well, we appreciate you joining us, and we look forward to chatting it up with you once again down the road about this wonderful boom to the baseball world.
Sounds great, guys. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Tom. Thank you.
Appreciate it. All right, Mr. Bloomfield, that wraps up another Forecaster episode for us. Any final thoughts? I know it's got to bring a tear to your eyes to see some of the people that helped create part of your new baby, you know, since you're on the cover and all. So any final thoughts?
I love talking shop with these guys. Thanks to Zach and Tom. Zach's player boxes are littered kind of throughout. You control F Zach Larson, Zach, for his boxes throughout the book. And then Tom's East Asia essay starts on page 229 this year. So he runs through a bunch of names and then kind of lists out at the end some of the bigger targets. So great stuff all around.
Yeah, that's a lot of info. Like I said, it's obviously the player boxes that Zach and all you guys do, but just the there's not a lot of, like, I've written for a couple of books. There's not a lot of Asian portions of it. So that goes a long ways to prep for things. So yeah, everybody go check it out as usual. We imagine most of you already do, but if you haven't, go to baseballhq.com, order the book, have some fun. The forecaster, I feel it's like calling the World Series trophy a piece of metal. Sorry, but
calm down, man. Yes,
yep. Go order it. And until then, check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm on Twitter at BDantric. We'll be back with you guys next week with more Bubba and the Bloom action. But for now, episode 302. See you.